Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this next half-hour segment is For the Record Program 217, an update on Eurofascism. In our last update on Eurofascism, program number 196, we spoke about, among other people, Jörg Haider, the so-called yuppie fascist, and there are those who would claim that that term is redundant. Jörg Haider is someone we've discussed at considerable length in the past in various programs about Eurofascism, and in For the Record program number 28, a three-part series, we focused almost exclusively on Jörg Haider. Haider heads a party, or used to head a party, called the Freedom Party, a most inappropriate name in as much as it was a vehicle for the political rehabilitation of Austrian Nazis who had served the Third Reich. Both Haider's father and mother had served the Third Reich, and even though he recently stepped down as the formal head of the Freedom Party, that is not expected to have very much effect at all on the development of fascism in Austria, because Haider's party is still part of the coalition government and wields influence. We're going to get right to a discussion of Jörg Haider's party and some of the political heritage that it brings to its current position as part of the coalition government in Austria. We're going to rely, as we have in the past, on the British anti-fascist publication The Searchlight. The Searchlight is, as I said, a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight. Similar name, but the Spotlight is pro-fascist and the Searchlight is anti-fascist. The Searchlight's issue of March of 2000, that is issue number 297, has an article about Jörg Haider called Déjà Vu. It's by Carl Pfeiffer in Vienna. Pfeiffer's last name, P-F-E-I-F-E-R. The article reads in part as follows, skipping down. Haider became leader of the FPO, that's the Freedom Party, the same year that Kurt Waldheim was elected president. Parenthetically, Kurt Waldheim had served the Third Reich as an intelligence officer. We've talked about that in the past. Continuing. For Haider, who was busy integrating Nazis into his party, hatred of foreigners rapidly became what anti-Semitism was for Hitler. He met almost no resistance. A poll published last October indicated that half of all Austrians dislike foreigners. Exploitation of this sentiment is a major component of Haider's success. A unified Europe surely cannot accept the open racism advocated by Haider's party. It is strange to see the Austrian right-wing press arguing that tolerance should be extended to Haider, who, a few hours after signing a declaration respecting human rights, had the cheek to nominate Hilmar Kabas, K-A-B-A-S, the Vienna FPO boss who masterminded last year's shameful racist election campaign, as defense minister. None of this is a surprise. In February of 1995, as editor of the official monthly of the Viennese Jewish community, I published an article headed FPO Yearbook with Nazi Tones about the contribution of Dr. Werner Pfeifenberger, one of its authors, who was then a university lecturer in Münster in Germany. Pfeifenberger is P-F-E-I-F-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R. Continuing. Pfeifenberger, I wrote, had warmed up the old Nazi tale of the world Jewish conspiracy, unquote. Among other things, he had quoted the headline of the Daily Express on March 24, 1933, Judea declares war on Germany, as proof that the Jews declared war on Germany. According to him, this meant there was a Jewish threat of war against Germany as early as March of 1933. That, of course, is a headline that was printed by Adolf Hitler. I would note that the Bertelsmann firm, headed originally by Heinrich Mohn, a member of the SS and the Himmlerkreis, had a house historian as recently as the early 1990s who had a very similar line. I mention that because Bertelsmann now dominates American publishing and much of the rest of the media in this country and the rest of the world. Continuing. Among Pfeifenberger's sources, unquote, were Hitler's propaganda chief Joseph Goebbels and the British fascist general John Frederick Fuller, who claimed Hitler wanted, quote, to liberate Germany from the shackles of international usury capitalism, unquote. Pfeifenberger sued me for defamation and lost in three Vienna courts. One of the editors of this FPO yearbook, incidentally, was Andreas Molzer, M-O-L-Z-E-R, Haider's advisor on cultural affairs, who was also editor of a weekly that published an article denying the Holocaust last June. So during a recent international press conference, I asked Haider about the Holocaust deniers in his ranks. I pointed out that only 11 days after Haider's insincere apologies for utterances attributed to me, unquote, an FPO front organization, The Freiheitlicher Akademiker Verband in Vienna allowed the former left-wing German terrorist Horst Mahler, now a Nazi, to give a lecture in which he expressed admiration for Hitler. Mahler claimed the Turks, unquote, were ready to take over Germany, and as a result of post-war re-education, our people do not dare anymore to resist their annihilation through being overrun by foreigners and through the Jewish people, the enemy of the Germans, unquote. I asked, can you cut the umbilical cord connecting you with Holocaust deniers and extreme rightists? Heider did not reply, while Schüssel sat beside him with a poker face. Heider has left little doubt in people's minds about where his sympathies lie. He praised a meeting of former SS men for showing such deep loyalty to their principles, and on another occasion described SS members as decent people of good character, unquote. 10 years ago, at an SS gathering, he lauded their self-sacrifice which saved Europe, unquote, and went on to say that, today, we need people like you who know the true meaning of the word homeland, unquote. A Nazi war criminal who murdered civilians and raped women in Italy and received Austrian citizenship after 1945 was, quote, a dedicated, loyal soldier, unquote. And in a sidebar to that article entitled Meet the New Ministers, four of the five new government ministers appointed by the FPO and their political heritage is discussed. This is why skilled observers don't believe that Haider's stepping down as the head of the Freedom Party will have any significant effect on that organization's participation in and effect on the Austrian government. This sidebar reads as follows. Four of the Freedom Party's five government ministers and a top parliamentary official have hit the headlines in the past through racist statements or association with Nazis. Jörg Haider has stood by all of them in the face of demands for their resignation. The new finance minister, Karl-Heinz Grasser, G-R-A-S-S-E-R, 31, while deputy governor of Carinthia, was the author of a directive banning the employment of foreigners on public building projects after he saw too many dark-skinned workers on building sites. Although he retracted the instructions after an outcry both from the general public and from construction employers who were desperately short of labor, Haider defended him. This was not Grasser's first brush with controversy. In 1995, he refused to take part in a wreath-laying ceremony to commemorate resistance to the Nazis on the grounds that the ceremony was, quote, celebrating the enemies of Carinthia, unquote. Michael Kruger, K-R-U-U-M-L-A-U-T-G-E-R, the justice minister, achieved notoriety for a parliamentary speech in 1995 in which he said that a dictionary defined concentration camps as punishment camps for civilians, unquote, and accused critics of himself and Haider of indulging in semantic masturbation, unquote. Kruger's assistant, incidentally, is René Szymanek, S-C-H-I-M-A-N-E-K, brother of Jörg Szymanek, a leading Austrian Nazi who was jailed for 8 years for paramilitary activities. René Szymanek was also a member of the Nazi Kameradschaft Langenlois. Their father is chief of the Freedom Party in Lower Austria and held a senior post in Austrian state television. Michael Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D, who holds the infrastructure portfolio, donated £6,700 of FPO funds in 1993 and 4 to the fascist magazine Aula, that's capital A-U-L-A. Aula was prosecuted for an article in 1994 which claimed that mass gassings by the Nazis, quote, could not have taken place, unquote. Elizabeth Sickel, capital S-I-C-K-L, 60, Minister for Social Security, was known to internal security services in both Germany and Austria for the activities of her son Heinrich, who had links with the band Nationalistische Front and Nationalistische Front. He also had connections with big wheels in the Austrian hardcore Nazi scene, including the convicted Auschwitz liar Gerd Hanzik and the jailed Nazi boss Gottfried Kussel. Thomas Prinzhorn, a leading FPO parliamentary official, attracted international notoriety during last October's election with a bizarre claim that asylum seekers and foreigners were being, quote, supplied with hormone treatment free of charge by the state in order to increase their fertility, unquote. Dr. Susanna Reis-Passer, R-I-E-S-S hyphen capital P-A-S-S-E-R, 39, is Haider's private secretary and close confidant. She is Austria's first woman vice chancellor and has been placed in charge of women's affairs. A fairly nondescript bureaucrat, she trained as a lawyer but made her career in public relations. And she also is someone that has a very, very interesting background as well, according to the article. Moving ahead, we're going to take a look at fascism developing in other European countries as well. Unfortunately, this is not something that is an isolated phenomenon, and time permitting, we're going to read another article from the March 2000 issue of Searchlight, which echoes an article that we read by Martin A. Lee, this from the Los Angeles Times, that discusses the growth of Eurofascism. In our last update on Eurofascism, we discussed Jörg Haider's visit to Italy and his forming of political links with Umberto Bossi of the Liga Norda. Bossi was associated with the first official fascist coalition government in Italy in the mid-1990s that we discussed in a miscellaneous archive show entitled Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce. That government was headed up by Silvio Berlusconi, a member of the fascist P2 Lodge, headed up by Mussolini supporter and Waffen-SS officer, or at least according to some sources, Licio Gelli. Gelli was certainly a Third Reich collaborator and was also an honored guest at Ronald Reagan's inauguration. Some sources say he was Waffen-SS. We're going to repeat an article that was in our last installment on Eurofascism. This is from the Financial Times of London of Wednesday, February 9th of the year 2000, an article by the appropriately named James Blitz in Rome. It's headlined, Italy Split After Haider Agrees to Visit Friuli. That's capital F-R-I-U-L-I. The article reads in part as follows. Italy's northeastern region of Friuli Venezia Giulia has been thrown into confusion by the possibility that Jörg Haider, the leader of the Austrian Freedom Party, could soon visit the area. Earlier this week, the Israeli embassy in Rome broke off a trade mission to the northeast after its regional council formally invited Mr. Haider to make the visit, which would include a trip to the site of a former concentration camp. Skipping down, Friuli Venezia Giulia, whose capital is Trieste, is one of Italy's smallest regions. A melting pot of rival cultures and traditions, it has long had strong political and trading links with neighboring Austria and Slovenia. Italy's Northern League, the separatist movement led by Umberto Bossi, plays a powerful role in local politics and has developed links with Mr. Haider's party. Note the links with Haider's party, because, as we're going to see, the aforementioned Silvio Berlusconi, who is now viewed by many as having a very decent chance to form a center-right government in Italy, has this past week introduced an anti-immigration bill which echoes Jörg Haider's anti-foreigner status. This is also a political football that has achieved a great deal of acceptability in other countries, including Germany and, not incidentally, the United States as well. American fascists and far-rightists are sounding a similar theme. The following is from the Financial Times of London of April 1st and April 2nd of the year 2000. This again by James Blitz in Rome. It's headlined, Berlusconi's Immigration Policy Rings Alarm Bells. This article reads in part as follows. Massimo D'Alema, Italy's prime minister, yesterday launched a scathing attack on a drastic new immigration policy unveiled by Silvio Berlusconi, the leader of the country's center-right opposition, warning that it amounted to a set of delirious principles, unquote. At the end of a week that has seen Mr. Berlusconi shift his immigration policy sharply to the right, the prime minister hit out at the proposals, describing them as disconcerting. Mr. Berlusconi, the media magnate and former premier, unveiled the proposals this week alongside Umberto Bossi, the head of the secessionist Northern League, with whom he has recently been reunited. The proposals look likely to be the cornerstone of the center-right's program for this month's regional elections. They brought accusations from the left that Mr. Berlusconi was allying himself with Mr. Bossi's xenophobic views and that both men were starting to embrace the anti-immigration policy of Jörg Haider of Austria's Freedom Party. I would add those charges would appear to be very, very well justified. Skipping down in the article, one concern expressed this week by Mr. Berlusconi's critics is the document's unusual ideological preamble. It rejects what Mr. Bossi and Mr. Berlusconi call a universal multiracial society that is rooted in the markets, unquote, which they likened to the 18th century radical anti-church thinking of the Jacobins of revolutionary France. Instead, it pledges their allegiance to a Christian, unquote, model of society based on the, again quoting, primacy of the nation, understood in the romantic sense as a nucleus and base of values, religion, culture, language, dress, and tradition, unquote. Again, very similar themes to what one sees in the American right as well, with the Christian right, very influential in the Republican Party, vowing to turn America into a, quote, Christian nation, unquote. About Silvio Berlusconi, again, a key member of the propaganda Due Lodge under Licio Gelli, as we looked at in the miscellaneous archive show entitled Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce, that available from Spitfire, and also a key participant in Licio Gelli's strategy for a democratic rebirth of fascism. In other words, fascism coming to power through the ballot, not the bullet. The Financial Times of London of Wednesday, March 15th of the year 2000, had an article about the growing political fortunes of Silvio Berlusconi, who may very well come to power again in Italy. His last coalition government was allied with Gianfranco Fini of the Alleanza Nazionale, the formal successor to Mussolini's fascisti in Italy. Again, the Financial Times of London of 3/15/2000 has yet another article by James Blitz. This one is headlined, Moment of Truth Approaches as Berlusconi Eyes Second Shot as Italy's Prime Minister. The article reads in part as follows. By the way, subheaded, 6 years after his humiliating fall from office, the Cavaliere is riding high in the polls. For Silvio Berlusconi, leader of Italy's center-right opposition, the moment of truth is fast approaching. Back in 1994, Mr. Berlusconi, media magnate and one of the world's richest people, fell from power after his 8-month-old government collapsed in a political crisis. In the years immediately after that, he has faced a series of corruption trials relating to his business activities in the 1980s, allegations which repeatedly threatened to force him off the political scene. But today, 6 years after his humiliating fall from office, the 63-year-old Cavaliere is back. His center-right opposition is firmly ahead in opinion polls with 50% of the support. Italy's ruling center-left coalition is in turmoil. There is a growing belief in Rome that, exactly 1 year from now, Mr. Berlusconi will be in the Prime Minister's office in Palazzo Chigi, leading his second government, that's Chigi. Before that, however, Mr. Berlusconi faces an important test. He and the center-right need to perform well in regional elections that are due to be held next month. And skipping down, thus far, events are going Mr. Berlusconi's way. He has extended the following of his center-right alliance and patched up relations with Umberto Bossi, the firebrand leader of the secessionist Northern League. And so again, note that Silvio Berlusconi of the P2 Lodge is viewed by many as a very likely successor to the Prime Minister's office in Italy, and note his links with Umberto Bossi of the Liga Nord, note Bossi's links with Jörg Haider, and note the echoing of the anti-immigrant theme that is so common not only to Eurofascism but also American fascism by Silvio Berlusconi. We're going to turn now to an article about the growth of fascism in Hungary. This once again comes from the Searchlight magazine. Time permitting, I'll give the address, etc., for the Searchlight at the end of this broadcast. This is from the Searchlight's issue number 296 from February of the year 2000. This is an article called Anti-Semitism on the Rise. It's called Hungary, Anti-Semitism on the Rise. And this also is authored by Carl Pfeiffer in Budapest. This article reads in part as follows. Even intellectuals can sometimes manage a good word for the current Hungarian administration. The novelist Péter Esterházy, for example, praises the government because it gives him so much material for his satirical jousts. He is not alone. No Hungarian satirist could complain of a lack of material from this source. There would be even more cause for mirth if the fiddling with history in Hungary were not so serious and did not summon up gruesome specters of the past. By the way, note that Hungary was part of the Axis in World War II. Continuing. The venting of anti-Semitism and hostility to Roma people is no longer the preserve of the street-corner gangs of Hungary's diminishing bands of shaven-headed louts. By the way, Roma are gypsies, what are commonly called gypsies. Continuing. That the biggest skinheads are sitting right up there in the political establishment became glaringly apparent last summer when former Minister Géza Jeszenszky, J-E-S-Z-E-N-S-K-Y, currently the Hungarian ambassador in Washington, wrote a, quote, private, unquote, letter on official-headed notepaper accusing leading Hungarian journalists and the liberal media of Goebbels' methods, unquote. The letter followed the revelation that the educated but maladroit diplomat had slandered Roma people as thieves and tricksters in the probably accurate belief that he was voicing aloud the silent thoughts of over half the Hungarian population. Skipping down, while putting the Roma minority at a disadvantage within its own borders, the Hungarian government, of which the racist-oriented Small Farmers Party is part, agitates busily on behalf of Hungarian-speaking minorities in neighboring countries, awakening legitimate fears that Hungary wants to scrap the Treaty of Trianon, which laid down the region's frontiers after the First World War. Such territorial demands can be heard frequently from the state-funded World League of Hungarians, whose chairman Zandor Suri, C-S-O-O-R-I, a distinguished poet, has openly voiced the opinion that liberal Hungarian Jewry wants to assimilate the Hungarians in thought and spirit, unquote. Although Jews actually account for less than 1% of the Hungarian population, anti-Semitism has never been hindered by a lack of Jews, and the WLH is able quite unashamedly to peddle Hungarian Nazi literature, including a history of ritual murder, unquote, at the bookstall in its headquarters. The same blood libel propaganda was essential to preparation of the deportation of hundreds of thousands of Hungarian Jews to Nazi death camps in 1944, when Hungary was occupied by the troops of its ally, Germany. Hungary's Jews were, with the enthusiastic cooperation of the Royal Hungarian Gendarmerie, packed into cattle trucks destined for Auschwitz, all in a matter of less than 2 months. In today's Hungary, apparently, such a deed must be rewarded, and so on October 19th last year, a memorial plaque honoring these murderous thugs was unveiled by Zsolt Lanyi, L-A-N-Y-I, president of the Defense Committee of the Hungarian Parliament, and a member of the Small Farmers Party in the courtyard of the War History Museum in Budapest. Skipping down. This necrophiliac unknown soldier ceremony was accompanied by a 12-gun salute and the peal of church bells throughout the country when Prime Minister Viktor Orban, O-R-B-A-N, said mournfully of the corpse, "He has returned home with God's help," unquote. Orban's government enjoys the support of the right-wing extremist party of Justice and Life, led by the serial anti-Semite István Surka, C-S-U-R-K-A, which has indeed called for Berdesi's rehabilitation. One of this party's pet journalists, István Lovas, L-O-V-A-S, was recently appointed as an advisor to Hungarian state television. The extreme right correctly interpreted this as a friendly signal because Lovas, who systematically relativizes the Holocaust, has accused a famous Jewish Auschwitz survivor of having no love for the Hungarians, unquote, and of blaming the Hungarian gendarmerie for the deportation of the Jews. Relativizing, even denying the Holocaust, is no barrier to getting a good job in Hungary, as the case of Maria Schmidt amply demonstrates. Schmidt, who teaches at a Catholic university in Budapest, is an advisor to the Hungarian Prime Minister. In mid-November, she gave a lecture in which she touted the argument that there had been several Holocausts, unquote. According to her, the Jews have turned the Holocaust into their own trademark, unquote. She denies that the extermination of the Jews had anything to do with war aims, claiming that Stalin's purges in the Soviet Union were also industrial murder, unquote. This mood for rehabilitation of criminals pervades the political establishment. In the education ministry, among the pictures of former education ministers on display, can be found that of Ferenc Rajnis, R-A-G-N-I-S-S, who held this post in Szilágyi's Arrow Cross fascist regime and was executed as a war criminal. What is lurking in the rooms of government ministries is also evident on the streets. The notorious forgery, The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, was published in Hungarian for the first time last summer and is on open sale at bookstalls in Budapest. It is not yet sold in mainstream bookshops, but the infamous Literature on the Jewish Question by yet another executed war criminal and book-shredding organizers, Mihály Kolosvári Borja, most certainly is. Protocols of the Elders of Zion was an anti-Semitic forgery that was one of Hitler's, one of the major influences on Hitler as well. Still more about Eurofascism, this also from the Searchlight magazine. We've spoken in, again, in the miscellaneous archive show, Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce, of how fascism went underground and how in Germany the Verfassungsschutz, a domestic intelligence agency in charge with seeing to it that Nazism does not return to Germany, has in fact been very active in promoting Nazi activists and doing the opposite from what it is supposed to do. Many of these Nazi activists have turned into terrorists, and for a more detailed discussion of that, among other programs, again, Why Johnny Can't Identify Il Duce. The Searchlight's issue of December of 1999, number 294, has the following along a similar theme, this from Tammy Wild in Berlin. The article reads in part as follows, skipping down. The past few years have seen several such scandals, notably one in Nordrhein-Westfalen, where a Verfassungsschutz agent ended up as a trainer for the now-banned Nationalistische Front Strong Arm Squad, and for the perpetrators of the fascist firebomb attack in Solingen in 1993, in which five people died. By the way, in some of our discussions with Martin A. Lee, author of The Beast Reawakens, and in discussions on the Oklahoma City bombing, we've talked about this particular fellow, Bernd Schmittbauer, and his links with people who figure in the Oklahoma City investigation and other events in the United States. Continuing. Michael Grube, G-R-U-B-E, now age 21, was recruited by the Verfassungsschutz in 1997. A hanger-on of the punk scene in Wismar until 1993, he was arrested in 1997 with 25 other Nazis who overran a campsite and seriously assaulted campers. Despite a previous conviction for malicious wounding, he was not charged because of his Verfassungsschutz link. On the advice of his handlers, known only as Jürgen and Klaus, he joined the Nazi National Demokratische Partei Deutschlands, or NPD, and became its county president in Wismar, Nordmecklenburg. Grube organized the security for the NPD's national conference in Stavenhagen at the beginning of 1998, and later that year contested regional elections for the party. During this campaign, he organized a meeting for another NPD candidate, the convicted terrorist killer Manfred Raeder, at which Raeder openly denied the Holocaust. By the way, in For the Record program number 86, we discussed Manfred Raeder, who was hired to lecture at the German Military Officers Academy and whose Nazi organization had been supported by the German army. And again, those are available from Spitfire. For the Record 86 is available from Spitfire. By the way, with this, we're about to conclude the program. You can reach the Searchlight magazine on their website at www.slight-demon.co.uk. Slight is F-light. Their magazine, Searchlight Magazine Limited, can be reached by regular mail at 37B as in boy, New Cavendish Street, London, WC1M8JR. That's William Charlie 1 Mary 8 Jolly Roger. That concludes this broadcast. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.